Indeed, here on KDBS 90.3 FM in Davis, we are as groovy as your life. My name is Andy Jones, known sometimes as Dr. Andy, for I host this radio show called Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, every Wednesday afternoon from 5 to 6 on your local community-sponsored, community-supported, really community-reflected radio station, KDVS 90.3 FM. It's a wild and woolly day here at KDVS. From 5 to 6 today, we will be interviewing Matt Mitchell of the California Budget Project. He's going to be dropping by the studio soon, and he will have with him some poetry, some Homer I've read. So we look forward to hearing Matt Mitchell's rendition of really our oldest poet. Also this hour, we will talk about bullying and how some students are using pagers, cell phones, and instant messaging to bully others. We will also talk this hour about Hart Crane, the poet of Brooklyn, and we will read one of his more famous poems, To the Brooklyn Bridge. Also this hour, we will find out about the wide variety of poetic events happening this week in your community, at least if you're listening to this show locally. Whether you're listening locally or not, I encourage you to give me a call this hour at 530-752-2777 for, like the classes I teach, I'm hoping that this hour of radio will be an interactive and collaborative experience. I wouldn't be here if it weren't for you, and nor would Ray Charles, who's here in spirit to welcome all of you to an August 6th edition of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Thank you, Ray Charles. We are back. This is Dr. Andy of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, thanking you for spending part of your Wednesday afternoon with me. You know, after the show today, I'm going to grab my guest, Matt Mitchell, and we are going to stroll over to the Davis Farmers Market. Many people, especially outsiders, when they think of the beautiful city of Davis, they think of the Davis Farmers Market. Well, as you probably know, every Wednesday afternoon during the summertime, one can gather with other community members, enjoy fine organic food, have dinner, and also enjoy the live music. So I plan to do that. I'll be there around 6:15. I'm wearing a bright purple shirt today. If you think of it, why not stop me and say hello? I'd love to hear from you. Well, the second summer session here at UC Davis has begun, which means many of us are back in the classroom. One of my colleagues, Don Meisenheimer, is teaching an incredible 6 classes this summer. I really don't know how that is humanly possible, but I do know that Don has impressed everyone on the 3rd floor of Voorhees. So, Don, this background tune is for you. Kind of jazzy, kind of bluesy, just like Don Meisenheimer himself. Well, I get to teach English 45 this summer. It is a class alternatively called Close Reading of Poetry and Introduction to Poetry. And in this class, I've had the great pleasure of introducing a number of my, 40 or 50 students to a wide variety of poems, including poems that they might not have a chance to read otherwise. And I've been following their advice, or the advice that I've given my students, in that I've been reading all of the poems, the assigned poems, out loud. And I had so much fun reading this pre-Shakespearean poem, They Flee From Me, by Sir Thomas Wyatt, that I thought I would turn down the blues and share some of it with you this afternoon. You're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. This poem by Sir Thomas Wyatt, 1503 to 1542, is called They Flee From Me. They flee from me that sometime did me seek, with naked foot stalking in my chamber. I have seen them, gentle, tame, and meek, that now are wild, and do not remember that sometime they put themselves in danger to take bread at my hand, and now they range, busily seeking, with a continual change. Thank it be fortune it hath been otherwise, 20 times better, but once in special, in thin array, after a pleasant guise, when her loose gown from her shoulders did fall, and she me caught in her arms, long and small, therewithal sweetly did me kiss, and softly said, Dear heart, how like you this? It was no dream. I lay broad waking, but all is turned. Thorough my gentleness into a strange fashion of forsaking, and I have leave to go of her goodness, and she also to use newfangleness. But since that I so kindly am served, I fain would know what she hath deserved. On the air. This is Dr. Andy Jones of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, welcoming you back to an hour of poetry, technology, and delightful conversation. My first guest, Matt Mitchell, just told me that a friend of his actually named his son after that poet that we just heard from, Sir Thomas Wyatt. Wyatt, what a cool name that is indeed. Well, another poem that I introduced to my students this quarter, And you realize the quarter's only 3 days old, but I've already had the chance to meet for 6 full hours with my students because of the compacted nature of the summer session. And as a result, we've covered a wide variety of poems, including Those Winter Sundays by Robert Hayden. Do you know that poem? Well, if you listen closely, you'll learn it now. The next voice you hear will be that of Robert Hayden.
Here is a poem that comes directly out of my boyhood in Detroit. It's called Those Winter Sundays. Sundays, too, my father got up early and put his clothes on in the blue-black cold. Then, with cracked hands that ached from labor in the weekday weather, made bank fires blaze. No one ever thanked him. I'd wake and hear the coal splintering, breaking. When the rooms were warm, he'd call, and slowly I would rise and dress, fearing the chronic angers of that house, speaking indifferently to him who had driven out the coal, and polish my good shoes as well. What did I know? What did I know of love's austere and lonely offices?
Thank you, Robert Hayden. We're back on the air. This is Dr. Andy of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. You know, one issue that we have raised often on this show is the digital divide and the problems that many low-income people especially have in either getting on the web or getting fast access to the web and really taking advantage of all the opportunities that the World Wide Web offers. I was just talking about this fact off mic with my first guest, who is addressing similar concerns in his work with the California Budget Project. I know you're curious about the CBP, and I am too. So let's welcome my first guest this afternoon, Matt Mitchell. Matt, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
It's great to be here, Andy.
Oh, it's great to have you here. Now, tell me, Matt, what is the California Budget Project?
Well, the California Budget Project is a research and advocacy organization that works on a variety of public policy issues affecting low and middle-income Californians.
So can you give me some examples of how you're watching out for low and middle-income residents of our home state?
Well, just today I was working on a report for Labor Day, which is coming up surprisingly soon.
Right.
And I was looking at really trends and educating the press and legislators on trends for working Californians. And one of those relates to technology, so we can talk about that.
All right. Well, let's start with that. What how did technology come into play, especially when you're thinking about labor? I mean, I think about there's an article in today's paper about the general exodus of people from California. And the guess is because of concerns about the high cost of living, the kind of bust with regard to the technology-driven economy that was in such full force just a few years ago. And because the rest of the nation is making fun of us because of this recall business. So I think, people are leaving California, and also jobs are leaving California. I don't know if you had a chance to hear any of that piece by Free Speech Radio News before this show began, but there are a wide number of concerns about jobs being outsourced to other countries, so that, as some people predicted with NAFTA and GATT, there are fewer of the best jobs waiting for American workers.
Well, you raise a whole lot of issues
Didn't
there.
I? Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, which is great, and I think one of them that I want to come back to is the bus, because we're in the, you know, the bus side of the boom and bust economic cycle right now, it looks like. And it's interesting, I was looking at some franchise tax board numbers today on my computer at work and crunching the data, and one of the interesting things actually had to do with the boom, and I was really surprised to look at the income composition of the boom and to see that, with some exception, that the boom was really an income boom in the top fifth or so of the population.
Oh, really?
That's right. And it had to do with a lot of factors, but part of that certainly was the technology boom in the Bay Area, and so I think that the digital divide does relate to that, and that you know, those that are cut off from technology and from those shifts in information technology and other forms of technology might have less access to those higher paying jobs.
Interesting. All right, so answer me this. You've just moved, speaking of the California budget project, you've just moved back to California from Brooklyn, where you lived for a number of years. Have you sensed any differing attitudes towards technology in Sacramento versus Brooklyn? I'll give you an example. Just today, it's been announced that SBC is going to set up many more of these wireless access points across the country. And that's something that is especially popular in the Bay Area, especially in San Francisco. And I know that in New York City, there are a number of places where one can have free access to the Internet if you have a laptop with a wireless card. Did you notice any kind of trends or issues like that or differing attitudes towards technology from one coast to the other?
Well, there's a big digital divide right in Brooklyn. And Brooklyn is an exciting place right now. I'm in California now. I think that Brooklyn, more than any place I've lived, is the ultimate melting pot of people from all over the world. And there's definitely very hip, very high-tech savvy areas in Brooklyn like Williamsburg that have those Wi-Fi networks. And there's also parts of Brooklyn that are very cut off. You can't get access to fast speed internet access in some of the neighborhoods of Brooklyn. And so it's a real mix. I think that whole Wi-Fi movement, it shows how that part of the economy, it's not like an oil slick that covers the whole world. It's
right.
Very patchy. So
some people are taking advantage of it, and it hasn't reached many others.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Brooklyn, let's hear a poem about Brooklyn. I promised you all earlier that we'd be talking a little bit about Hart Crane today. And you might know that the Brooklyn Bridge was something that Hart Crane spent many years staring at. And he was thinking about it when he spoke of the part of the Rhapsody in Blue called The River. He said, "The extravagance of the first 23 lines of this section is an intentional burlesque on the cultural confusion of the present, a great conglomeration of noises analogous to the strident impression of a fast express rushing by. The rhythm is jazz." So I thought we'd see if we can hear any of that jazzy rhythm in this poem by Hart Crane called "To Brooklyn Bridge." You know, I should really have some jazzy music on in the background to read this. Let's see what we have nearby. Here is "Watermelon Man" by Herbie Hancock. Are you a Herbie Hancock fan, Matt Mitchell?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, let's hear some "Watermelon Man." You all know this tune at home? I don't know if this is the sort of jazz that Hart Crane had in mind in 1927, but either way, we'll hear some Herbie Hancock as I read you "To Brooklyn Bridge" by Hart Crane. "How many dawns, chill from his rippling rest, the seagull's wings shall dip and pivot him, shedding white rings of tumult, building high over the chained bay waters' liberty. Then, with inviolate curve, forsake our eyes as apparitional as sails that cross some page of figures to be filed away, till elevators drop us from our day. I think of cinemas, panoramic slights, with multitudes bent towards some flashing scene never disclosed, but hastened to again, foretold to other eyes on the same screen. And thee, across the harbor, silvered paced as though the sun took step of thee, yet left some motion ever unspent in thy stride, implicitly thy freedom staying thee. Out of some subway scuttle, cell, or loft, a bedlamite speeds to thy parapets, tilting there momently, shrill shirt ballooning, a jest falls from the speechless caravan. Down wall, from girder into street noon leaks, a rip tooth of the sky's acetylene. All afternoon, the cloud frown derricks turn, Thy cables breathe the North Atlantic still. And obscure as that heaven of the Jews, thy guerdon, accolade thou dost bestow of anonymity time cannot raise. Vibrant reprieve and pardon thou dost show. O harp and altar of the fury fused, how could mere toil align thy quiring strings? Terrific threshold of the prophet's pledge, prayer of pariah and the lover's cry. Again the traffic lights that skim thy swift unfractioned idiom, immaculate sigh of stars beating thy path, condense eternity. And we have seen night lifted in thine arms. Under thy shadow by the piers I waited, only in darkness is thy shadow clear. The city's fiery parcels all undone, already snow submerges an iron year. O sleepless as the river under thee, vaulting the sea, the prairie's dreaming sod, unto us lowliest sometimes sweet, descend, and of the curve ship lend a myth to God. Listening to KDBS 90.3 FM. This is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Matt Mitchell, you also lived in the shadow of the Brooklyn Bridge for a number of years. What does that poem or what does the Brooklyn Bridge make you think of?
Well, it really evokes for me both poetry and technology because I used to, for a period, ride my bike across the Brooklyn Bridge every workday.
How wonderful.
And it was wonderful. It's the bicycle, to me, is the most elegant and simple of technologies and effective. And I would ride up the bridge and through those beautiful Gothic arches,
right.
Which was very beautiful, and you really felt in touch with the sky and the water and the city. It's a great experience.
It's interesting, that poem, it treats the Brooklyn Bridge as kind of a manifestation of the greatest mechanical worksmanship of the time, almost as a natural icon. I mean, the imagery, the diction, it reminds one of almost a romantic poet, that's capital R, something by Keats or Wordsworth discussing, whether it's a nightingale or a daffodil. That it's interesting that Crane, in the more kind of dry modernist times, is able to infuse the Brooklyn Bridge with this kind of romantic energy. And I'd imagine that if you have, George Gershwin playing in your head when you're biking across the Brooklyn Bridge, going off to work every day, that must be sustaining in the way that a walk through the woods can be sustaining for some people.
Absolutely, it's sustaining, and I think that you really caught something there, Andy, which is that the Brooklyn Bridge, it's a very powerful sort of engineering monument, and at the same time, it's beautiful. I don't know if everyone feels that it's beautiful, but many, many people feel that it's a beautiful and inspiring place, and I feel that my professional background is in urban planning, and I feel like too much of our physical environment, and really, and that could mean the city at large or just our office space or our home, the technologies lack that sort of intrinsic tactile beauty.
Absolutely. So are you an Apple user then?
I'm quickly becoming one.
Okay.
Or hope to become one.
Well, good. I can help you with that. Well, we're chatting with Matt Mitchell of the California Budget Project. If you'd like to join this conversation, give me a call at 530-752-2777. This is KDBS 90.3 FM. We will be right back after this important message.
The Linux Users Group of Davis, or LUGOD, is a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting the Linux computer operating system and other open source products as an alternative to expensive, proprietary, and monopolistic software. LUGOD meets in Davis on the first Tuesday and third Monday of each month. For more information, visit LUGOD's website at lugod.org or contact Bill Kendrick at 530-759-1019 or via email at root@lugod.org.
That last public service announcement, of course, was for LUGOD, the Linux Users Group of Davis. I'm a big fan of LUGOD myself, though an Apple user rather than a Linux user. If you're interested in what LUGOD's up to, then certainly visit lugod.org, and they'll tell you more about that. One thing I like about LUGOD, Matt Mitchell, is that whenever they come on the radio or whenever one of their acolytes or spokespeople is interviewed by me in the news, the next day there is not only a copy of the recording on the LUGOD website, but also a transcript.
Wow.
So, yeah, the LUGOD folks, they're all about doing it yourself. And so, you know, I don't know if they just dispatch one of the LUGODites and you know, they just say, make a transcript of this. And so,
shall it be.
Exactly. And so there's evidence of any kind of LUGOD happening on the LUGOD website, which I appreciate, and which I'm sure the LUGODites do as well. I don't know if they call themselves LUGODites. It's probably too close to Luddites, which, you know, they're definitely not. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about New York. We've talked, Matt Mitchell, about the California Budget Project, where you're working now. But I also know that you're on the board of trustees for a group back in New York called Place in History. Can you tell us what Place in History is all about?
Place in History is a group that exists to really bring to light and uncover the histories under everyday places, which are often buried and we don't know they exist. We kind of feel them,
right?
But they're there. And so we do public projects, outdoor projects that have to do with particular places. Mostly we've done it in New York City, but it's not limited to that. I hope to do some work in California as well.
Oh, interesting. So extending Place in History out to the West Coast, because as I look at their website, which is placeinhistory.org, I see a number of, well, I see first that they're based in Brooklyn, right on Manhattan Avenue, but that a number of the places that make up Place in History, the Bowery, Long Island City, Newtown Creek, the Playgrounds Project, Red Hook, that's a great title,
yeah,
a great name. They certainly they have a ring of New York City to them. Are those all projects right around, in and around Manhattan?
Those are. Those are projects right in and around Manhattan and Brooklyn. And Newtown Creek is Queens, actually. So,
okay. So give us an example of one of these projects and what your group was able to do and who benefits.
Yeah, one project that I worked on most closely, and this relates to this theme of the beauty and technology, actually, is a project that I called the Playgrounds Project.
Okay.
And I got real interested in playgrounds as a place where things can happen, where people from different communities can come together, and also as a place where you see imagery and forms that you don't see in the city. Otherwise, there's a lot of interesting sculpture of animals,
right,
sort of dreamlike environments that you wouldn't normally see in the city, whether that's, you know, the city of Sacramento or Brooklyn or, you
right,
know, Los Angeles or what have you. And I think that's important, that sense of life to the city. And interestingly, there's an issue of control. You mentioned the Linux users.
Yeah.
But the best, I found in Brooklyn anyway, the best imagery was created by local residents really controlling the, you know, their own design process, or the Parks Department had some really smart people, and some of the more useful but least interesting stuff was the sort of mass-produced playground equipment that you see really anywhere.
Right, and certainly we have that in parks in Sacramento and Davis as well. But I also know, I mean, when I think about my own playground project, I remember, and this was probably 7 or 8 years ago now, living on East Street in Sacramento, and I think you probably remember that apartment, and volunteering to help to build the huge play structure at McKinley Park. Right there, and you all probably know McKinley Park in Sacramento. It's in one of the most beautiful areas of Sacramento, and not too far from my guest Matt Mitchell's neighborhood, where lots of beautiful mature trees, a pond with wildfowl, and a number of fields for all sorts of sports, a flower garden where people often get married at this time of year, and also, in part due to my labor,
yes,
a huge play structure. And although there was a plan to it, it does not look like every other playground in the United States. And I think that that's kind of what you're talking about, that when the community can come together and build something that's unique to that community, then it really does support kind of the authentic experience of a local place, rather than just another park that seems to be dropped out of the sky for children to frolic in.
That's a great story, Andy, and I'm happy, you know, now that I have a small child, that playground is there. And
right.
I think that you bring up a really interesting thing about, you know, public spaces and how they work. You know, we're talking about place and history, and I think that McKinley Park is great because it has all those different kinds of things going on, and it's less one group's territory,
right?
You know, that we have a very diverse society, but often very compartmentalized, you know, and that sometimes a public space can become the sort of the property of just one group, and it can become a place of fear and anxiety for other groups.
Yeah, absolutely. I should mention that McKinley Park also has a library, it has a swimming pool, it has basketball courts, and those different structures attract different sorts of communities. And I think that that's always good for a city as a whole when these different communities can kind of intermingle and be on the edges of one another, so that it's more likely that, you know, they can learn from each other, learn cultural experiences right there on the playground.
Housing developers, take heed.
Yes, absolutely. Well, let's hear another poem that is about place. This one is by Langston Hughes. We've had a chance to look at a Langston Hughes, actually a New York City Langston Hughes poem called Theme for English B in my introduction to poetry class this summer. Here's another Hughes poem about place, and I believe he takes a good 30 or 45 seconds to introduce it. It's called The Negro Speaks of Rivers. You're listening to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS.
This is The Negro Speaks of Rivers, one of my earliest poems, written in 1920, just after I came out of high school. The way this poem came to be written was that I was going to Mexico to visit my father, who lived in Mexico City, and on the train going across the Mississippi River, just outside St. Louis, I looked out the window and I saw this great muddy river flowing down toward the heart of the South. And I began to think about what this river meant to the Negro people, how, in a sense, our history was linked to this river, how in slavery time, my grandmother told me that to be sold down the Mississippi was one of the worst things that could happen to a Negro slave. And then I remembered that I'd read about Abraham Lincoln going down the Mississippi as a young man, and he went on a raft to New Orleans, and he saw human beings bought and sold in the slave market there, and he was so horrified by this that he never forgot it. And many years later, of course, we know that it was Lincoln who signed the Emancipation Proclamation. And so, as the train went on into the gathering dusk, because it had been about sunset when we crossed the river, I took my father's letter out of my pocket and began to write down on the back of his letter this poem, The Negro Speaks of Rivers. I've known rivers. I've known rivers ancient as the world and older than the flow of human blood in human veins. My soul has grown deep like the rivers. I bathed in the Euphrates when dawns were young. I built my hut near the Congo and it lulled me to sleep. I looked upon the Nile and raised the pyramids above it. I heard the singing of the Mississippi when Abe Lincoln went down to New Orleans, and I've seen its muddy bosom turn all golden in the sunset. I've known rivers, ancient, dusky rivers. My soul has grown deep like the rivers.
Thank you, Langston Hughes, for sharing that with us here on KDBS 90.3 FM. You're listening to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, and I'm chatting this afternoon with Matt Mitchell. He's working currently at the California Budget Project, but he's worked for a good number of philanthropic and non-governmental organizations over the years.
That's right.
And he's here to tell us a few stories, to talk story, as they say in Hawaii. But Matt, I hear that you have actually memorized a short poem. I force my students to memorize poems when I'm teaching them poetry. And you've carried a poem around in your head for lo these many years. What did you want to share with my listeners and myself?
It's a little poem called The City.
Okay.
And it goes, "In the morning the city spreads its wings, singing a song in stone that sings. In the evening the city goes to bed, hanging lights about its head."
Oh, that's great. And that's Hughes?
That's Hughes.
Yeah. That's another Langston Hughes poem. So I don't know if you all know Langston Hughes. It seems to me, and we were talking about this off mic, that there are a few poets who everyone is introduced to. Robert Frost, you had mentioned, and we'll hear a Frost poem in a couple minutes. Langston Hughes, perhaps Maya Angelou to a later generation of students. I don't know. Can you think of others? Maybe Walt Whitman.
Sure, Walt Whitman.
Especially where you are, you think of the Brooklyn Ferry, and you might think of Walt Whitman. Are there others that immediately come to mind for you?
Elizabeth Bishop comes to mind. I love the Greek poets, Sappho and Homer.
Yeah. Well, I'll give you a chance to read some Homer in a moment. And I'll ask this question of all of you listening at home. I'm wondering if there is a favorite poet that everyone is exposed to that we've excluded from this list, and maybe a poem that you would like to hear. You could give me a call at 530-752-2777. Well, while we're talking about favorites, why don't we hear a poem by Robert Frost, who is an inevitable choice when I ask folks, for instance, when I had the vice president of Palm Computers, vice president for education on the show, and asked him right on the spot, who's your favorite poet and should we hear a poem? He mentioned Robert Frost. Many folks think of The Road Not Taken or Stopping by the Woods on a Snowy Evening. Why don't we hear a different poem today? This one is called The Oven Bird. And here, ladies and gentlemen, wait, I've hit the wrong button. All right, I've got it right. And here, ladies and gentlemen, is Robert Frost.
The Oven Bird. There is a singer everyone has heard. Love, the midsummer and the midward bird that makes the solid tree trunk sound again. He says that leaves are old and that for flowers midsummer is to spring is 1 to 10. He says the early petal fall is past when pear and cherry bloom went down in showers on sunny days a moment overcast. And comes that other fall we name the fall. He says the highway dust is over all. The bird would cease and be as other birds, but that he knows in singing not to sing. The question that he frames in all but words is what to make of a diminished thing.
We're back on the air, and you're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM. Thanks very much for tuning in to your local community radio station this afternoon. We'll be right back after this important message.
Les habla Ricardo Montalbán. Hay muchas maneras de medir el éxito. Para los Shriners son los casi 700,000 niños con problemas ortopédicos o quemaduras que ellos han ayudado tratándolos por toda América del Norte con los últimos adelantos médicos por más de 80 años y completamente gratis. Hay un hospital Shriners que trata a los niños de esta zona. Si conoce a un niño que los Shriners podrían ayudar, llame al 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, dispensando ayuda y esperanza a los niños desde hace más de 80 años.
Thank you, Ricardo Montalban. Now, I know that, Matt, Spanish is one of your languages. Haven't you done some traveling in Mexico?
Yeah, I've done some traveling in Mexico and in Spain.
Oh, excellent. So, any stories or cultural events? I know I didn't give you a chance to prepare for this question, but any quick anecdotes you want to share with us before we go to a poem by Allen Ginsberg?
Well, I have a great story about a professor of mine when I was in Spain, and we were all traveling to a town called Ronda, which is in Andalusia.
Mm-hmm.
And he started telling a story about a radical sort of anarchist group back in the 20s called Los Profesores.
Oh, yeah.
Who had a way of absconding with groups of college students. Mm-hmm. And that, in fact, the Los Profesores were, you know, reputed to be still around. And
they were alive and well.
That's right. And who knows what happened to us after that. But somehow I made it here to Davis.
Well, that's good. We're all sitting around a campfire. And was there a claw involved? That's usually how these stories end. The camp counselor pulls out a claw, and all the kids scream.
He had us all on the bus, actually, so we were confined there.
All right. Well, that would be a different sort of horror movie. Well, we're talking about poems of place this afternoon, chatting with Matt Mitchell of the California Budget Project. By the way, if you'd like to find out more about Matt Mitchell's work, you can visit the website for this show. Go to www.culturelover.com. From there, you can find out a little bit more about Matt and visit cbp.org, as well as, what's the place?
Place, www.placeinhistory.org.
Placeinhistory.org. And if you want to find out about some of my most recent guests, you can also visit culturelover.com. Last week, Matt, I think you and I talked about this. I had Georgie Russell on the show, and she is one of those citizen candidates for governor.
Oh, I noticed that on your site. Yeah.
Exactly. And Georgie Russell, I don't know if she's garnering the support of many California voters, but there's lots of interest in her. And I'm sure not only because she is selling thongs on her website to promote her candidacy for governor. But as a result, when you Google Georgie Russell, the website, culturelover.com, comes up third, right after her two sites. And so as a result, I'm getting lots of traffic all of a sudden to the website, people who are interested in Georgie Russell.
Well, let's hear it for Georgie.
Absolutely. Well, if you'd like to find out more about Georgie Russell, you can go to culturelover.com. If you'd like to find out more about Allen Ginsberg and his poems about place, then you should just put your ear up to the radio.
The poem is A Supermarket in California, published in the book Hell, put out by the City Lights Company in San Francisco. The title is A Supermarket in California, the author Allen Ginsberg. What thoughts I have of you tonight, Walt Whitman. For I walk down the side streets under the trees with a headache, self-conscious, looking at the full moon. In my hungry fatigue and shopping for images, I went into the neon fruit supermarket dreaming of your enumerations. What peaches and what penumbras, whole families shopping at night, aisles full of husbands, wives in the avocados, babies in the tomatoes, and you, Garcia Lorca, what were you doing down by the watermelons? I saw you, Walt Whitman, childless, lonely old grubber, poking among the meats in the refrigerator and eyeing the grocery boys. I heard you asking questions of each. Who killed the pork chops? What price bananas? Are you my angel? I wandered in and out of the brilliant stacks of cans following you and followed in my imagination by the store detective. We strode down the open corridors together in our solitary fancy, tasting artichokes, possessing every frozen delicacy, and never passing the cashier. Where are we going, Walt Whitman? The doors close in an hour. Which way does your beard point tonight? I touch your book and dream of our odyssey in the supermarket and feel absurd. Will we walk all night through solitary streets? The trees add shade to shade, lights out in the houses. We'll both be lonely. Will we stroll dreaming of the lost America of love, past blue automobiles and driveways, home to our silent cottage as in Camden once? Ah, dear father, gray beard, lonely old courage teacher, what America did you have when Sharon quit poling his ferry and you got out on a smoking bank and stood watching the boat disappear on the black waters of Lethe?
And that was Allen Ginsberg. And this is 90.3 FM KDVS in Davis. Thanks very much for joining me on the air this afternoon. My name is Andy Jones, and I am the host of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. This afternoon on the radio show, we've been joined by Matt Mitchell of the California Budget Project. But like many guests on this show, Matt is a Renaissance person, and he's also prepared to read some poetry to us. I noticed that Allen Ginsberg in that last poem talked about the Odyssey that he imagined Walt Whitman were taking through the supermarket in California. And that's a pretty apt allusion, because I see that you've brought a copy of the Odyssey with you to 14 Lower Freeborn this evening.
Yes, I was very torn between the Richard Lattimore translation and the Fitzgerald translation.
Uh-huh.
But I love the Odyssey. It's something that I've read aloud with my wife, and like all poems that I care about, I've read them out loud. So yeah, I have a passage that happens in the middle of the Odyssey, and it's at a point where Hermes is sent down by Athene and by Zeus to talk to the nymph Calypso about letting Odysseus go home.
Excellent. Well, great. Let's hear it.
He spoke, nor disobeyed him the courier Agiorphontes. Immediately he bound upon his feet the fair sandals, golden and immortal, that carried him over the water, as over the dry, boundless earth, abreast of the wind's blast. He caught up the staff, with which he mazes the eyes of those mortals whose eyes he would maze, or wakes again the sleepers. Holding this in his hand, strong Agiorphontes winged his way onward. He stood on Pyrrhea, and launched himself from the bright air across the sea, and sped the wave tops, like a shearwater who along the deadly waves of the barren salt sea goes hunting and sprays quick-beating wings in the salt brine. In such a likeness Hermes rode over much-tossing water. But after he had made his way to the far-lying island, he stepped in out of the dark blue sea, and walked on over the dry land until he came to the great cave, where the lovely-haired nymph was at home, and he found that she was inside. There was a great fire blazing on the hearth, and the smell of cedar split in billets, and sweet wood burning spread all over the island. She was singing inside the cave with a sweet voice as she went up and down the loom and wove with the golden shuttle. There's a growth of grove about the cavern, flourishing. Alder was there, and black poplar, and fragrant cypress. And there were birds with spreading wings who made their nests in it, little owls and hawks and birds of the sea with long beaks, who are like ravens. But all their work is on the seawater, and right about the hollow cavern extended a flourishing growth of vine that ripened the grape clusters. Next to it there are four fountains, and each of them ran shining water next to each. But turned to run in sundry directions. And round about there were meadows growing soft with parsley and violets, and even a god who came into that place would have admired what he saw, the heart delighted within him. There the courier, Agiorphontes, stood and admired it. But after he had admired all in his heart, he went into the wide cave, nor did the shining goddess Calypso fail to recognize him when she saw him come into her presence. For the immortal gods are not such as to go unrecognized by one another, not even if one lives in a far home. But Hermes did not find great-hearted Odysseus indoors, but he was sitting out on the beach, crying, as before now he had done, breaking his heart in tears, lamentation, and sorrow. As weeping tears, he looked out over the barren water.
Oh, that's neat. And really, one thing that we talk about in my lyric poetry class is that many lyric poems begin with a moment of disquietude, or you know that something is amiss. And really, the section that you just read to us kind of ends the same way, that Odysseus is crying on the beach, and something's got to happen about it. And of course, you know, that's where the story begins. What is it about Homer's Odyssey that has stuck with you and compelled you to return to it so many times over the years?
So many things, really. One thing, it's a very simple thing, is that I love the quality of water that flows through the whole poem. I mean, the mm-hmm. poem is set on islands and in the sea, and there's a very romantic, I guess, small r, you know, right, quality to that, and also this sort of heroic seafaring quality that I love. So that's one thing that I like a great deal about it.
Oh, definitely. It's a it's an adventure story and a poem all wrapped up into one, as well as a maritime story. Who could ask for anything more? Well, we were talking about downtown Sacramento not long ago. Matt Mitchell of the California Budget Project, and I know that the CBP is not far from Cesar Chavez Park. Thinking of that, I'd like to remind everyone that Sacramento Food Not Bombs is now serving every Sunday at 1:30 p.m. in Cesar Chavez Park on 10th and I Streets, downtown Sacramento. Food Not Bombs provides free vegetarian meals to people in need. To find out how you can help by volunteering or donating goods, email sacdofoodnotbombs@yahoo.com for more information. Now, speaking of Cesar Chavez Park, we've already mentioned McKinley Park. Is there another park or another public place in your recently rediscovered hometown of Sacramento that you've been thinking about or visiting or enjoying?
Yeah, my absolute most favorite public place in Sacramento is not one that's very green in the sense of grass, but it's down under the freeway at about 10th Street on Sunday mornings, and uh-huh, it's the Farmers Market, which is, I think, a place really where people from all walks of life come together. It's not any one group's territory, and also just the food is beautiful and tasty and sensuous, and I love it. So
absolutely. Now, can one still hear music under the freeway? Because occasionally, when Kate and I would visit the Farmers Market when we were Sacramento residents, I remember that occasionally you'd see the equivalent of a street musician under the highway there. Is that still the case?
It's possible that it is, but I haven't seen it in the short time that I've been back here.
Well, if you're looking for a Farmers Market, and if you're looking for some street musicians, you could drop by Davis this afternoon, starting, well, right now. You're probably on your way right there right now, he said to everyone listening at home. If you drop by anywhere between 3rd and 5th Streets and between C and D, you will see an entire Central Park filled with ponies, children, food vendors, musicians, frisbee players, small children running free, dogs jumping after frisbees. It's really a great time in the essence of Davis. So I'll invite everyone to that. But let me also remind everyone of a couple of events going on this coming week in the world of poetry. One is that the Mahogany Urban Poetry Series is presenting weekly readings of poetry from across the globe at 9 p.m. at the Jamaica House Restaurant, 1704 Broadway, where there is a $5 cover. For more information, you can visit Malik Speaks, M-A-L-I-K Speaks.com, or call 916-492-9336. The poet who we had on the air 2 weeks ago, Paul Lippman, he has been a featured poet at the Mahogany Urban Poetry Series, and that is truly a enlivening and sustaining cultural experience. So make sure that you check that out if you're interested. Also, I noticed that this coming Saturday, the 9th, the Poems for All Second Saturday series is presenting Richard Lopez and Andrew Sullivan at 8 o'clock in the evening at the Book Collector, 1008 24th Street. That will be hosted by Richard Hansen. And Richard Hansen is the founder of the 24th Street Irregular Press, which publishes Poems for All, a series of miniature poetry booklets distributed, quote, like seeds in a barren cultural landscape. He hosts a monthly poetry reading by the same name. If Hansen weren't afraid of needles, he would tattoo this Ted Jones line on his arm. Quote, you have nothing to fear from the poet but the truth. Speaking of a beat poet, Ted Jones, who died only in the last couple months. Now, we were talking off mic, Matt Mitchell, about beat poetry and about a documentary that you saw not too long ago. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
It was a documentary called The Source, and it was on a whole bunch of the beats, but the real...